In this episode, we will learn from an award-winning career coach and podcaster how to bounce back from layoff, rebuild your confidence, and ace your next interview. Let's get started. Struggling to land that big promotion or find that perfect new job? Looking for strategies and practical steps to help you succeed? This is the Reframe and Reset Your Career podcast. I'm your host, Harsha Borralesa, and we're here to help. Thank you for joining me today. Here are some highlights of today's episode.
The key thing is that you want to rebuild your confidence, you have to continue, because we're always going to have blips. Hobbies are not just for kids, they're for adults too. You know, we need them. Cal Newport talks about you've got to do deep work to actually really fully understand that topic or subject.
Welcome to episode 77 of the Reframe and Reset Your Career podcast. Our guest today is Soma Ghosh. Before we begin, I wanted to thank all the listeners of the podcast and YouTube channel for their continued support. We now have downloads in 114 countries, the latest being South Korea and Zambia. Please note that in this episode, we may touch on mental health and wellness topics, purely in general terms. If you have specific issues or concerns, please contact a suitable professional. Now back to the show. Soma is a careers advisor who has previously worked in education and helping young people with career advice and job hunting. She has a PG dip in careers guidance, as well as a degree in psychology and criminology. She runs her own career mentoring business, where she helps ambitious women find their dream job and career and understand what their idea of career happiness is. She has written for Thrive Global and Happyful magazine, as well as hosting her own podcast, the Career Happiness Podcast, since 2019. She has been featured in BBC Work Life, Yahoo Finance, Stylist Magazine, Albright Collective, Asian Voice, Metro, and on BBC Asian Network. Welcome, Soma.
Hi, Harsha. It's great to be here.
Love having you on the show. So, Soma, I'm a big fan of the arts. Is there a performer, song, book, or film which you'd like to share? And I also believe that you're a big film fan like me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could end up talking about movies all day, but I'm going to go with a classic 1950s movie that I've actually done a podcast episode about on my podcast, All About Eve. I just thought it would be appropriate to mention that because we're recording this whilst in Women's History Month, so I thought for that reason it would be a good one. But also because I think that movie in itself, not only is it just a classic, it's just something that embodies how far we've come with female careers and that kind of thing. Plus Bette Davis, I mean, if you think about that era, can't go wrong. So yeah, that's a movie that I thought I'd mention.
Oh, cool. No, I love those old black and white films. And yeah, it's a shame, I think, that more people don't delve into that because of the sort of the black and white nature of it. Now they've been coloured, but there are some sort of classic performances there. And I love sort of back in the day watching those old black and white movies, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, we've got nothing better to do. So love that. So back to the start, you studied psychology with criminology. That's a great combination.
yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because the psychology is the major part and the criminology is the minor part. And actually, when I was doing that degree at uni, it was actually psychology with sociology. My dad was a criminal barrister, and I've just always been interested in kind of learning about kind of the criminology side of things. And so for me, I just thought, okay, getting to know people, like working with people, and that's why I picked the psychology. But the criminology part for me was more about just having something a little bit different. And obviously we've got forensic psychology and things like that. So I just thought it would be a good merge of subjects because I wasn't sure if I was going to do a job based around psychology at that point. And it gave me some variety and combination of two subjects. Yeah.
So are you a big fan of CSI, crime scene investigation?
I never really used to watch CSI, but you know what I got into during lockdown, weirdly, Harsha, talking about like crime and stuff, just for fun. I used to kind of go back and watch Poirot and those kind of crime shows. Yeah. And when I was growing up, I loved watching with my sister, Columbo. I loved watching Columbos. So, you know, like, I know that's like proper old OG gold stuff, but like, for me, you know, those kind of mysteries, although in Columbo it was a bit different because we always knew who the murderer was, I just loved that aspect and learning about all those sorts of things. We got to learn about, more intense stuff like murder, rape, those kind of things. But I just loved writing the essays. I really, really loved that aspect of it. And it was just different to psychology. Yeah. It reminds me of my degree, weirdly.
Cool, fantastic. So how did we go from psychology and criminology into careers?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, Harsha, because for me, I always knew I wanted to work with people. I am a people person. I'm an introvert by nature, but for me, I'm fascinated with people. And I'm one of those people, when I go to a cafe and I'm reading a book, I will secretly be people watching. Not in a weird way, just because I just love watching what people do. And so it got to a point where I knew after my degree, I wanted to do something. I was actually interested in the mental health aspect a lot. I worked for Mind, I did some volunteering there. And so after a while, I thought, okay, maybe I want to delve into the psychotherapy angle here. Tried that route, didn't really happen for me. I was too young at that time. I was only like in my early 20s. They want a lot of life experience. So what actually ended up happening is I came across on the Prospects website careers advice. It was between organizational psychology and careers advice. And I took the initiative to actually reach out to my local careers advice center and meet with a careers advisor and find out more about it. And then I applied for my PG dip. You don't just get to work with young people, you get to work with people at uni, you get to work with people in all sorts of different atmospheres. And he kind of sold it to me, and I applied, and I knew that this is something that I wanted to do. When I started my postgraduate, it was so varied. And what I really, really loved is not just that we were helping people, but we were kind of being, you were saying about, you make a joke about the criminology part, me being an investigator, but I actually love doing research for people. So part of me being a careers advisor is not just giving people that information, advice, and guidance. It's also about investigating all the different careers out there. And I do describe myself very proudly as a career geek. I love researching all the different jobs out there. And my husband's often asking me, what is that career? What is this career? And I don't know everything, but that's why I love it so much, because it's changed so much in the 15 years I've been a careers advisor. And I kind of just ended up working in schools. I thought naively, Harsha, I was going to work in unis, but when I did my work experience in schools, I loved it so much, I ended up working in schools. For me, it's just become this thing where I've just really, really just enjoyed careers, but because of experiences that have happened to me, it's ended up becoming a business. So yeah, things shifted a lot.
No, I love that. And I love the whole idea of curiosity, because if you look at your sort of one's own path, if you can be curious about what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, what you're good at, it's that sort of self-reflection. So I think it's really important for everybody's, not just careers, but life, to really try and understand yourself and think about, what are you good at? What areas can you improve at? And especially, I think, in nowadays, we're dealing with a global environment. We've got global competition. So there's no good just standing out in London or in the UK. You've got to stand out, in Europe or globally, and you're competing with all these people. If you can find out what makes you unique, and I think all of us have our unique stories, don't we? And it's I think that curiosity. If you can do it yourself, that's great. But if you can get somebody like yourself or just a friend to give an honest appraisal of what you almost stand for, what your values are, I think that's really helpful.
Definitely, definitely. And I think part of the reason that I kind of started the business is because I was very deeply unhappy at work. I'd gone through redundancy. I'd gone through thinking, and I've actually written about this in my recent newsletter on LinkedIn today, actually. It's just come out, where, often we're designed, Harsha, and I know we've spoken about this before when we've had, conversations. We've been designed to have this one intrinsic career, whether it be a lawyer, dentist, accountant, whatever it is. And so for me, I was really struggling with that when I was made redundant. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a careers advisor for the next 20 years. I haven't got anything to worry about, very naively when I was about 27. And then I realized, no, I'm questioning myself and I'm confused. And when we're looking at people's strengths and we're looking at people in terms of where they want to go and what they want to do, often it's because we as a society are dictated and we're told, especially if you're a millennial, you come from, Generation X, kind of told that you've got to do things a certain way, and you have to study, and you have to do a degree, and you have to do this. And what I'm finding with the new generation, also Generation Z, is that they are much more open to thinking outside of the box. And what I mean by that is some of them don't do degrees straight away. They'll do the work experience first, and then they'll do maybe a degree apprenticeship. So when we're looking at the strengths, when we're looking at the skills, when we're looking at the abilities, the world of work has just changed. And my role, not just as a careers advisor, but really my business, but I'm helping women, is to help inspire them, not just with confidence, but with that clarity and purpose, because often that is the thing that is missing, that purpose. Why am I getting up every day? Why am I doing what? And the other thing that I want to talk about here is, flexible working. It's become this huge thing. But often I was speaking with my husband about this yesterday. Too much autonomy, I'm seeing it come up with my clients, can be very overwhelming for people. So there's a whole number of issues that I know I'm saying here, but this is in the present day, some of the things that are coming up. And a lot of people are feeling very overwhelmed and stressed. And I talk about well-being as well in my work. But yeah, there's lots I can say. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about the work that I do.
No, I just love that. And especially I think the confidence piece, because I think a lot of people are, say, good at the technical stuff. They have studied hard or picked up qualifications and learned how to do things very well. But I think for some people, say if you're an introvert, you may not be that confident. I'm an introvert like you, Soma, but I've had to create almost this other persona to get by, and I'm sure it's the same thing with you, because unfortunately the world likes extroverts and they like people who crack jokes or all that sort of stuff, which is not fair, but it is unfortunately the way it is until things change. So I think that whole idea of confidence is such an important piece. What are the things you tell your clients about how you can almost become confident? Because I think it's a very difficult thing to do or to learn.
I mean, confidence is a huge topic. For me, when I think about confidence, it's interesting what you're saying about the introversion. And I always recommend my client to read Quiet by Suzanne Cain, because it's just a brilliant, brilliant book. Often, as introverts, you are right, the world can be a very extroverted-led world, sadly. And what can happen is, because extroverts are naturally quite confident, they go into meetings and they're just talking. Sometimes, though, Hosha, they're talking for the sake of talking. They're not like us introverts who we watch and we absorb everything. Do you know what I mean? And I know that Suzanne, in her book, she actually says that, interestingly. But if we're thinking about confidence, it's going to be different for everybody. My range of clients is, yes, I work with women in their 20s and 30s, but I'm still doing work with teenagers and the parents of teens. That's another aspect of my business. And what I find is, weirdly, teenagers who are, needing that confidence boost, often it's because they're told, for example, I'll give a throwaway example here and I'll come back to the professional women, is because they're told, oh, you're not good at maths, so you can't do a STEM career, but they could actually be good at science. You're then actually skewing away their confidence when you're saying something like that. Then if we come to professional women, there's lots of reasons behind that. And I wrote about this in my newsletter today. A lot of it, at the moment, I'm a UN delegate, and the theme that keeps on coming up time and time again, Harsha, is that women are usually the caregivers. I'm not a mum myself, but I saw growing up my mum as a young widow. She was managing a busy career. She was a teacher. And that issue of confidence with herself is, she just asked for the opportunity. She didn't miss out. So in that way, she was very confident. However, she was having to juggle everything as a caregiver. And so for many women, they have to sacrifice their salaries. They either go part-time, or often what they do, they give up their job. And what ends up happening there is that if they are then a single parent, then there is a financial aspect there. And so your confidence goes. So that when you end up going back to look for a job, you then look at everyone else and you're thinking, oh, crap, like, how am I going to compete with everybody here? And often, when we think about confidence as a whole, when I'm seeing this with my clients, some of the key things that I say to them is, what does confidence look like for you? Don't compare, is the first thing I say, because that's just going to overwhelm you. But I also say to them, that, in an ideal world, what do you want? Oh, trauma, I just want a job that fits my qualifications, or I just want a career where I'm appreciated, or I'm able to be creative, or have a business that really, really fits who I am as an individual. And so I know I'm being very broad when I'm talking about confidence here, but when I sit down with my clients, it's looking at what lights them up, what makes them happy. But it's also a bit more deeper and a bit more wider than that, because for somebody, they can be, an introvert and just do presentations. But for other people, they can be really, really good at designing and creating things. So it's also looking at the things that they know, the skills that they have, because skills is a huge thing for 2024 at the moment. It really, really is. Looking at the skills that they love and tuning into that. And there's some exercises that I do with them, but I also actually, Harsha, one of the things I do with my clients is I make them do an AI quiz, and on there they'll come up with the top skills that they are really, really, really good at. So then that gives them a confidence boost. And also asking people what they're good at, because often we don't know what we're good at, Osha. We don't. And I think it's about readdressing that. So there's lots of things around that. I'm kind of wrapping it up because I don't want to go on a tangent about confidence here. But I think the key thing is that you want to rebuild your confidence. You have to continue, because we're always going to have blips. Something's going to happen. A challenge is going to happen in our life. And we have to then rebuild that by going back to what our definition of confidence is day to day, and really, really addressing what we want in order to be career happy.
No, I love all those points you're making there, Soma. I completely agree with you that sometimes we don't realize what we are good at, and we need somebody else to point that out to us. And also, I think sometimes the things that we find easy, we just take it for granted. So I suppose, say with podcasting or conducting an interview, probably both of us think, oh, we can do it. We do it at a reasonable level. But maybe other people think, wow, Soma and Harsha did it really well. That's a skill that we may not recognize in ourselves, but it's only when other people like the work or whatever that you think, oh yeah, that's a skill. But it also does show the more you do something, the better you become at it. And it's that sort of reinforcing cycle that if you can do something a number of times, you will get better at it, won't you?
Yeah, definitely. And there's something about the competence part there that sometimes, I'm sure you had this as well, Harsha. When I recorded my first episode back in 2019, and I listened back to my, oh my God, there's so many things that I could clean up here compared to like a more recent one. But that's again your inner critic, and confidence and the inner critic have a huge factor as well, Harsha, because I think we are all harsh on ourselves. But the way that I look at it is the way that we speak to ourselves is also very important. So when we're looking at confidence, and I know that often people talk about affirmations, but affirmations can really, really help with confidence. They really do. And there is science to back it up. It's not like some made up, thing. It really does work. But also, I think it's about, journaling. If you're worried about something, a lot of the time, confidence is coming from anxiety and stress, because you think that you can't do something. So journaling about what's going on with you, and understanding, and also, a lot of my clients, a lot of them, because they are very stressed, they're not just working with me, they're seeing a therapist because there's some other mental health aspects going on there. And that's a huge factor as well that I have to address, because I think a lot of people don't make time for their mental health. And I'm in therapy myself right now, and it helps so, so much to have that mental health support.
Yeah, because it's interesting that whole idea of people talk about speaking things into existence. Now, I'm not sure about the science behind that, but I do believe that if you are intentional about the things that you're sort of looking for, almost your brain will reprogram itself to look for those things. So, say, I don't know, with looking for podcast guests, I'm always thinking, oh, would they be interesting? Would they be not? And for whatever reason, you seem to come across people, and not everybody's going to say yes. I mean, I'd love it if Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates
You never know. You
or
can
Chris.
do a podcast vision board or something, Harsha, and have some of those people. You never know. That'd be,
Or Christopher Nolan with
yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. That would be fascinating. You could talk about some of his films.
Inception.
Inception, yeah, Tenet, those kind of movies.
Yeah, was Leonardo DiCaprio dreaming at the end or not?
Oh yeah, we're still debating that one, aren't we? No, I think we're going to be
Exactly.
debating that one till forever. Yeah.
Sorry, spoiler for those who haven't seen Inception. Yeah, there's some wonderful points you've made there. But actually, sort of moving on from that, I think this point about confidence when you say lose your job or you get made redundant. I mean, what are your thoughts about? I suppose, firstly, once you do get made redundant, or if unfortunately you are made redundant, how do you sort of recover? And then how do you get back on the horse again with your job search?
Yeah, so I have experienced this myself, Harsha, and I want to talk about that very briefly before I go into
Sure.
some of the things around this, just to help anybody who's listening, because I think often when people ask this question, they're like, "Oh, you're not going to get it, you're not going to understand." And I want to come from a place of empathy first and foremost. When I went through redundancy, it was completely unexpected for me. I was just like very naive. I think I was 26, 27, and when it happened, we went through this process where we had to like fill in this, it's like a 10-page document, Harsha, where we
Wow.
had to write down why we were competent, why we were good enough. And it was like an essay. And I actually kept that document for a while when I would go for interviews because there was so much stuff on there. I actually, even though I didn't end up getting picked, they actually said to me that, Shauma, you've written some really great stuff here. And it actually helped me get duped over to another job role, ironically. So they said to me that there's some really good stuff here that you need to talk about in your interview. So I was like, okay, I'll take that feedback right with me. But that process took 2, 3 months to go through. And if you think about that, it doesn't seem that long, but when you're going through it, Hosha, it seems so much slower and so much longer
Yeah.
than you realize. And so for me personally, when I went through it, I actually did go through reactive depression. And I very openly talk about this because I think I'd never been through anything like that before. So I was a bit like, why am I not feeling myself? Why am I finding it difficult to get out of bed? What's going on here? And I literally thought, because I'd studied psychology, I was like, no, there's something not right. I need to go and see my GP. And so coming back to your question, when people are going through redundancy, you may have that kind of situation, sadly. I hate to bring it up, but please make sure you go and get support. It's the first thing if that's happening to you. Secondly, the first thing with redundancy is, and I've heard stories from my clients and other people about this, is that the atmosphere in the office, the atmosphere in your workplace may be very hostile. There may be, a little bit aggression in the workplace. It may not be the best environment for you. So also what I would say as well is if you're going through this, concentrate on what needs to be done, whether that's an interview, an assessment, whatever it is. Just concentrate on what needs to be done if you want to stay in that role. If you're then thinking about whether or not you should take voluntary redundancy or not, or those kind of things, weigh up where you are in your life. If you know that, you've got, and I'm going to bring the practical element in here, a mortgage and all those kind of important principles, look at that, really, really, really address that. Because I think often we get so bogged down by the emotional aspect of it, we're not looking at the practical aspect of it. And the other thing that I would say as well for anybody who has maybe lost their confidence, because you asked about confidence here, is to start applying for jobs and looking at what's out there to rebuild some of that confidence. Because if you're not selected, and this is the part that I think often gets forgotten, if you're not selected, if you're not successful, that's where the dip in confidence might happen. And it can feel very personal, Harsha, when it happens to you. And it can feel like, why have they picked me and why did they pick that person? When actually it's not about that, it's about you then finding maybe a door or pathway that is actually more accessible to you. Because I wouldn't be talking to you today if I hadn't been made redundant. I would have continued working in careers advice work, and I still am doing it, but I'm doing it in a different way. So it's about looking at the new opportunities. And if you choose to change your career, you've got to take steps to do it in a very methodical way. And often people don't want to do that because it involves rerouting everything. But those are some of the things I would say.
And I love that point about not taking things personally, because people end up feeling that they're not good enough, or the people they're working with say they're not good enough, or they get terrible reviews, which it's almost as if they're being set up for failure. And that really does harm your confidence. And it's almost like this gaslighting thing that's going on. And you can see that you've done a good job, but people are saying, well, you haven't. And it's almost like a self-justifying thing so that they don't feel bad about getting rid of you or whatever. People have to be very careful about staying in environments which aren't good for them. Even if they like the job, if I think they get their confidence is being worn down. And sometimes I talk about in with guests is that if you can see the environment changing and the atmosphere changing, and usually it comes with your boss, because generally if your boss likes you and gets on with you, you've got cover to some extent. And it's almost like being a detective. So the criminology comes in play well. Yeah, and then thinking, oh, okay, in 6 months' time, in 9 months' time, I may lose my job. Almost like reverse engineer and say to yourself, look, what are the steps I need to take to find that job in or be in a position where I have a new job in 6 months or 9 months? Because I always think that if you're in a situation where you're being worn down by the environment, you're just not going to be in a good headspace. And even if the ideal job comes along, you'll interview terribly.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, actually, Harsha, because when I was going through that process, I went for a couple of interviews and they didn't go so well. It's interesting that you mentioned that. And when I'm working with my clients, they have that situation. Sometimes, actually, having that break can give you more clarity. So if you're, unemployed for a little while, it can give you more clarity and it can give you that purpose-led thing to help you. But I totally agree with you about if there is going to be then a toxic environment, because when I left that job or when I was made redundant, I found out more people were laid off and I found out there was an eruption of lots of different things that happened. And a couple of my colleagues who are still friends with said, "Oh, you're lucky you weren't there. By you being somewhere else, you were better off, basically." So I think also it's very important that if you know for your own mental health or even for your own career development, that's a very important point that you're not going to grow anymore. Actually, going somewhere else a bit later on and having a break, because we're always working, Harsha. If obviously I understand if financially you can't afford it, there are ways of you getting temp work, freelance work, have that built in, look into that. But don't be afraid to also recognize that you're allowed to have a bit of a break if you can afford to do so. Because when I was made redundant, I was still living with my mum and sister. I was very lucky. But I know everyone who might be listening today may not be in that position. So it's about you making decisions that fit in with your lifestyle choices. Because I think often we and I also want to just say to the people who aren't parents out there, you may have elderly relatives that you're caring for. You're still carers. Just because I think often that they get forgotten about, that is an added responsibility, and spending maybe some quality time with your parents or whoever it is you're looking after is also beneficial because you don't get that time back. I just wanted to mention that.
No, I think that that's a really good point. And especially, I think the pandemic, it showed people, what is really important about life. I mean, sure, yeah, it's nice to do well in your career. It's nice to have more money. I mean, clearly, we all need money, but there's only so much you can spend it on. There's only so much you really need. So yeah, no, I love those points. And also, I think you should never feel you're in a situation where you can't walk away, because I think sometimes if your boss they think this is the only option for you, then they almost take advantage of it. And I think human beings are they're quite not sneaky, but they can sense when you're this is the only option. And I've seen that in situations that in working environments where people feel that that is the only option, but clearly, that's not. And they just need to reframe the situation and think, okay, I've got these skills. I've got these qualifications. If this company doesn't want me or doesn't like me or my boss, and sometimes it does come down to the individual boss that is the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I've been in those situations where I have walked away. And I know when I'm helping my clients, I had a client I was working with last year. She was miserable to the point of, she had enough savings and she was able to get something, Harsha. But she said that, not only was it affecting her mental health, it was affecting her productivity. And
Yes,
that's the
yes.
other thing that people don't talk about, that like when you're going in every day and you're actually tied to the computer to the extent where you're working from, let's say, 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, then you don't have a social life. And we've got to have, I don't want to use the words balance because that word is used so much, but you need to have some element of social life as well as work life, because that will make you a more happy, grounded person, and it will keep you sane, especially. And I'm saying this as someone who doesn't have a family, because I'm married, but I don't have kids. You've got to have recreational things, hobbies. You've got to have hobbies because it helps you to feel, to be a rounded person. And I talk a lot about that with my clients as well, because hobbies are not just for kids, they're for adults too. You know, we need them.
This is a bit of a silly tangent, but have you seen that film Office Space? Where
I love that
that
movie so much, Joshua. That's actually one of my favorite movies when it comes to the workplace. Brilliant.
exactly.
Brilliant work movie.
Yeah, so I think for our listeners out there, if you haven't seen it, that's so cool because I love that guy who basically doesn't care, but he gets a promotion.
Exactly. Like, it's brilliant. Everyone needs to watch that, especially if you think your workplace is bad. Obviously, take it with a pinch of salt. Watch that movie and then you won't be complaining so much.
Love it. So say you are looking for work, Soma, and you're lucky enough to get an interview. What are your, say, top three strategies for preparing for and acing that interview?
So I mean, with interviews, I when I'm working with clients, I don't help them so much with the interview aspect, because it's much more around the career happiness. But in terms of if they do want advice with me around that, what I try and do is preparation is definitely key. And when I mean preparation, I don't just be like just like blindly going through the notes and just like writing little notes on the side of the, you know, the job requirements and that kind of thing. No. I mean actually properly spending a couple of hours. And I know it sounds intense, but the interview process is completely different now, Marsha. You know, sometimes, often in many roles, you're interviewed four or five times, right? And there are stages, there's a process to the interview process. So, I mean, knowing what the process is, and if they don't email you and tell you the process, be that person who asks, because they want you to be forward thinking, they want you to plan, they want you to want it. So prepare in a way where you're aware of what the stages are. So if you've got to do a presentation, if you've got to do something that is really, really going to help you get that job, do all the preparation for it and do it step by step, day by day. If you're currently not in a job, you have more than enough time. You have more than enough ample time to be doing this every day. If you do at the moment, you're working in a busy job, maybe use your time in the evenings where you would be watching EastEnders or whatever it is that you watch. Use that time instead. If you're someone who obviously has children or has other care responsibilities, use the time when they're sleeping or wake up early in the morning. Make the time, prepare. So the first tip is prepare, I would say. And then the next thing I would say is plan. Know in your mind when all those dates are going to be. Put them in your diary. Again, I know it's like sounds a bit over the top, but if you really want that role, if you need the money, whatever reason, or even just because you're just really excited because you know this role is going to make such a difference to your career trajectory, you've got a plan. So plan is the next one. And the next thing I would say is practice. And I know this might sound a bit like, oh, practice, I'm not 5 years old for, you know, reciting for a song here, or I'm reciting for a play. But the reason why I'm mentioning practice is if you know what the job spec is and you know what the essential skills are, the essential requirements, going through each of those points and seeing where you fit in and actually practicing maybe some particular questions that may come up, or scenarios, or things that you know they're definitely going to ask you. And if you're not sure, you know, we're doing a podcast at the minute, but there are loads of YouTube videos that can help you with this as well. And to just exactly have specific examples that you know you're going to be asked about, especially if it's a technical interview. If you work in the IT industry or something which is very specific, maybe you work in the medical line, you've got to have specific examples. Don't just go in willy-nilly without any of that practice and preparation in place. But those are some of the main tips I would say for an interview. And also just like some basic tips around making sure that you know when it is. where it is, and also like if it's online, telephone, those kind of things, which I know sound commonsensical, but the number of people I speak to, Harsha, who don't even do that, sometimes it concerns me. It still happens. So yeah, those are some of the things I would say.
And I love the point you're making about practicing your answers because, yeah, you should probably have a pretty good idea of what is going to what sort of questions are going to come up, so you can craft some answers. And I think it's obviously very helpful to write it down or put it on a Word document, but actually speaking that out, it's such a difference because. Yeah, I think every time you say it, it will become more authentic. Probably the first time you do it, the second time it's a bit stilted. But I find that the more it's like giving a speech, the more you give that speech, the more you own that speech, and eventually you won't need any cue cards. It will just come to you naturally. When you have a mastery of your material, then I think stuff just comes to you that from nowhere. And I think it's that whole thing about your brain. It's not thinking too much, it's just doing. And then these insights come out from nowhere. And you're thinking, wow, where did that come from? And also I think that point about don't forget the small things, like make sure you know what time it is, what requirements are. If you're going to be on Zoom, make sure you look okay, your background is okay. Wear a suit if you have to. But also one silly thing is that say if you're doing it over Zoom and you're not used to wearing a suit, then sometimes practice beforehand in having a tie or a jacket. Because I think the worst thing is to have that on and then you feel uncomfortable.
Definitely. There was another tip that I thought I'd just mention, and it's just a
Yeah, please.
practical one. If you're already a very anxious kind of jittery person like me, don't have try not to have caffeine in the morning that day. If your interview's in the morning, try and avoid caffeine. If it's in the afternoon, just don't have caffeine. And I know that sounds like, oh God, I really need my coffee or my tea in the morning, but you can sacrifice it for a little bit. You'll be fine, because what that ends up doing is, if you end up having like, if you're quite nervous and you end up drinking more coffee or more tea, you end up going into the interview like this, like, And I know that sounds like a very practical tip, but I think that one is a really, really key one. And not just that, it's interesting what you're saying about the clothing. Like, don't wear any jewelry or anything that's too sparkly, because sometimes interviewers get distracted by that,
Yes.
apparently. And you also might be distracted by something glittering in the sunlight or something. Suppose it's a sunny day. You don't know where they're going to interview you. It's going to reflect. And just make sure that, yeah, if you're not used to, suppose you have been out of work for a short period of time, make sure that you're practicing calls or just wearing your smart clothes at home, so that you're getting used to not being in your trekkies when you're practicing, or whatever it is, treks or, But yeah, those are some of the things I would say.
No, but I absolutely love that. So, say for our listeners who are in, work, but they're having to deal with a difficult boss or a toxic work environment. Now, we've obviously touched on these in our previous discussions, but what are your thoughts about handling that situation? I mean, clearly that's a podcast interview in itself, but are there any sort of top level things that people can think about to make the situation better?
Yeah, no, this is a really common question, and it's one of the main reasons why women work with me, sadly, because they are experiencing a toxic boss, colleague, or work environment. The first tip is to sense check. And you might be thinking, what does that mean? But sometimes when you're in a new job, it can just be that maybe that person's having an off day and you've experienced that. Just so sense check it and have an understanding of how this person is day to day. And if they continue to engage in behavior where they're being rude, they walk into your office without knocking, they call you out for not doing work, they keep on mentioning you in emails, because it's not just face-to-face stuff. It's stuff that can happen online. It's stuff that can happen in emails, in documents, embarrassing you in a meeting, whatever. If it continues to happen, keep a diary, keep a log of everything. And the reason I mention this is because often, if you are a HSP, I'm a HSP, I'm a highly sensitive person, it might just be that they've just said something that day and it didn't mean anything, Harsha. However, if there is a pattern and then you're seeing that pattern with other people, like a couple of other people, you're possibly dealing with a toxic boss. And if there then there's a hierarchy of it, you see, and I know I've experienced this, and some of my clients have experienced this, is that I worked with a manager once who was very toxic and, you know, was very kind of passive aggressive towards me, and she had a boss who was like that.
Yes.
So sometimes there can be this hierarchy of that horribleness going on, that toxic workplace culture. And if that's happening, you then need to ask yourself, how is it affecting me? For some people, they might just happily get on with their job harsher and just be like, okay, they're not actually saying to me, they're saying things to other people. And you know, it's only when they have a bad day they're saying stuff to me, and you get on with it. However, if you start to see that it's becoming very personal and it's affecting your work and it's making you physically unwell or mentally unwell, then you need to then really, really address, you know, why is this happening? What can I do? What I say about this as well is that when you're dealing with somebody who is like this, is sometimes, you know, not necessarily confront them, but just say to them, maybe just have a one-to-one discussion with them and say that, you know, why did you say this to me in a meeting? Or is there something I've done? Or dot, dot, dot. Have a one-to-one conversation with them. If that doesn't work, then you need to be thinking about, okay, do I want to go to HR or do I want to report this to somebody? And this is the stage, Harsha, where I think people really struggle with, because they don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to have any conflict, or you don't want to have any like weirdness in the office, because sometimes what can happen, and it's happened with some of my clients before, is they've reported it and things go the other way. It gets worse rather than better. The other thing that can happen is if you hand your notice in because you found a new job or you're going somewhere else, that can tip them over the edge, because if you're a good worker, you're very good at what they do and they need you, they can go catatonic on you. You know, you're laughing, but it does, sadly, it does happen.
That's so bad.
Yeah, no, but it does, because I think, you know what it is? It's an element of control. A lot of the time when you've got a toxic boss like this, most of the time, not always, they are control freaks. They like to
Yeah,
control the
of course,
narrative
yeah.
of what's going on. So when that happens, it's going to then spin them into thinking, okay, you've created more work for me because I've got to find someone else to fill your role now. Damn it, you know? And that's going to add to their stress. And usually one of the reasons why they're stressed is because they can't even manage their own
Yeah,
workload, and they're putting that on you. So, I mean, those are some of the things I would say. Whether or not you leave, because this is a question I'm asked often, Asha, and I want to just address this very quickly in this question, is it's up to you, and it's about you understanding what's working for you. You know what you were saying about you are allowed to walk away? Of course you are. You're allowed to have your dignity in place. And if your dignity is, I'm not putting up with this rubbish and my work is still not being appreciated and I could go somewhere else, then of course leave. But if you see after a while that they change, you know, I worked in an environment where when I handed my notice in, the woman was later on offering me a full-time job, even though she'd been absolutely vile to me. And she didn't even understand she was doing that to me. So sometimes it's also about if you're able to earn that, you know, respect from the individual, it could go the other way. But 9 times out of 10, if it's affecting you, leave the job, is what I would say. Yeah. But have a plan in place. You know, find something new. Make sure that you have your finances in order.
No, I just love all those points you're making, Soma. And I think, yeah, it is having a plan and trying to think through things in a measured way, maybe speak to a trusted friend or a career coach or somebody where you can just have some sort of independent view is really helpful. Yeah, it is a very difficult situation. And I think there are no easy answers in that situation, because as you're saying, if you complain, you could make the situation a lot worse. You do have to be quite careful about how you approach things. But on the other hand, I think also don't be afraid, because you shouldn't be in an environment where you're not happy at all. But yeah, so the reason why I was laughing so much is that I always think sometimes, where you have those bosses who are terrible, it's almost like you really want to say, like, screw your job, I'm just leaving, and just hand in your notice and go. So actually, when they realize what how much of a contribution you made to the company, it shows how almost lacking in insight and emotional intelligence they are, that they're meant to be a manager, so they should be managing you, not making things more difficult for you. They should actually be helping you to achieve your potential, which is slightly ironic. They're there doing
Yeah,
everything
no,
but
definitely. And
that.
I think it's one of those things, I think, where it's interesting that you mentioned that, the hindsight. And I think often they are looking at the lens of, you're more of a problem for me, and now I'm having to sort out another problem. And you don't realize. I remember when I was being bullied in a workplace, when I handed my notice in, the lady who thought she wasn't my boss, by the way, I had another boss, but she was bullying me. She came up to me because I didn't hand my note. Well, she wasn't my boss. I handed the notice into someone else. She came up to me and she goes, "Oh yeah, we're going to have to find someone to replace you now, Shoma. And that's going to take time," like this. And it was just like, well, you're not the one even who's doing the employment thing. Someone else is. So it's like, yeah. But I think she thought I didn't value my job, even though I got really good feedback from everyone else apart from her. It's a kind of like an ironic thing sometimes. Yeah.
And actually, I think, I suppose, with this podcast, and I'm sure with the work you're doing, Soma, I think what I'm trying to hopefully get across with guests like you and the other guests, it's about trying to empower the listener and say to them, look, you may be in a difficult situation, things may be hard. It's about trying to tell them, look, try and maybe control the things that you can control. Focus on the things that you do well, because actually it's almost as if you can look at that working from the inside out, you can actually get a lot of confidence. You can see what you're good at, and you can actually see that you do have value, because sometimes working in those difficult environments, you do get worn down. And I think there's almost like a filmic, cinematic thing about this. It's just, the first act, the person gets the job. The second act, they've got a terrible boss. And then the third act is they get promoted, or they go off and do something amazing. And then they can tell their boss, I no longer need you. So it's really about trying to just feel better about yourself and try and progress despite this evil boss doing everything in his or her power to stop you.
Yeah, no, definitely. As you were saying that, I was just thinking of Succession. I don't know why. And I was just thinking of the main character played by, is it, I've forgotten the actor's
Is it
name
Brian
or,
Cox?
yeah, Brian Cox, his character. And just, can you imagine having a horrible boss like that? Oh my God. Oh God, I was just thinking of that, but I don't know
Well,
why that came in my head there.
the funny thing about Brian Cox is that he was the first, I think, Hannibal Lecter in
Yes.
the Manhunter, and he was very scary.
Yes. Yeah, no, he is quite scary, but it was making me think about how many toxic bosses and organizations there are, like the one in Succession, that actually grind people down, and they make people lose their self-esteem and confidence because people lose who they are. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about that people, in essence, because they're so overworked and they don't have a personal life, they lose who they are, which is quite sad because you shouldn't. You shouldn't. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting when people encounter that sort of very aggressive macho environment. I just don't understand how people, if you're a leader and you get sort of good people, and clearly you're paying a lot of money, you've gone through a huge hiring process, you should be doing your best to empower these people. You should hopefully making themselves feel good about themselves and the environment they're working in. Whereas if you feel, there are, I'm sure, bosses who are always looking not to catch you out, but to see, are you on your toes? Do you have all that information? I mean, clearly not everybody's going to have every detail of what they're doing. I don't see what the harm is in saying, I don't know. Yeah, it's much better to be in that team environment where people can be thoughtful and maybe go offline, do the research, and then come back with a sensible solution.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's interesting what you're saying there, because I think it's what I was saying about the careers advice aspect of what I do. Often people, the other day someone was asking me about Princess Engineering, and I only know the very basics about Princess Engineering. I do want to look a bit more in detail into it, but it's like within my role, I don't know about every single job out there. When I'm doing research for my clients, I have to research it. And it's the same in any type of job. You may be very good at what you do. You may have been in the industry for 20 years, but something new might be coming up that you need that time to do the research. And what, Cal Newport talks about, you've got to do deep work to actually really fully understand that topic or subject. Yet we live in a world where shallow work, if people have read the book, is the norm, Very interesting what you're saying there, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's much better to sort of put your hands up and say, look, I don't know. And maybe we need more resource or we need more time, but to make a decision, especially if it's an important decision based on either incomplete information, incorrect information, is actually quite a dangerous thing to do for yourself, for your team and for your company. So yeah, I lo love the points you're making. And I suppose the other interesting thing is, say we've got a listener who's looking to make a, say, career change or pivot. Are there any sort of general points that you could offer to them to help them in their search?
I think when anyone's thinking about career change, Harsha, I think the first thing that I want to address here, and I've worked with clients who have gone through the career change process, and sadly, some people they've wanted to change their career, they've worked with me, and they've not finished. And that's not a reflection on them. It's very common that this happens. And I think often it happens because of money, sadly. Because if you are not working for a while and then you're going and doing another degree or qualification, you can't always do both. So the first thing I would say is you need to be practical about how you're going to manage the career change or career pivot whilst being in your current job.
Yes.
Because I think often people think that it's something that is, it's not for the faint-hearted, is what I would say. So be practical about how much savings, how much money you have. And, as we're recording this, we are in a recession. I do want to reiterate that because even when I'm working with my clients, I always try to be as money conscious as possible because finances for everybody in all situations, everyone's thinking about it. But have a look at your finances first before I get into the practical tips. The second thing I would say is when you're thinking about anything to do with your career change, research. Because people sometimes think they want to change their career because they're unhappy in their job, they're unhappy in that role or their company. But actually, they just need to be in a different environment. They love the industry they're in, whether it's finance, whether it's something very specific like IT, whatever it is. But actually, it's the environment. So sometimes people think it's career change, but actually, it's not. It's a different environment. So take some time to analyze it. And when I mean time, I mean process whether or not going to a new environment will change your mind. If there is something that you want to look into, I worked with a client a long time back who was very interested in going into interior design, and she did it in the evenings while she was in her day job because she was a lone parent, so she couldn't afford to not work. She had to work. And I think she was able to make that transition, and it took a bit longer. So you've got to be prepared to be a bit patient with your career change because it's not going to happen in a short space of time. It might take a couple of years for you to really, really change your career. And the last thing that I would really, really say around this is that if you really want to change your career, what will that mean you giving up? And what I mean by that is if that means that you're not going to be able to see your friends or family as much on weekends, then how long of a sacrifice is that going to take? If that means not going to family weddings and those kind of things, just very boundaryful and say to them that, look, it's not anything personal. I need to do this because of my career. And then at the end of it, I'm going to be happier. And to explain to people that you're changing because you're going to be happier, because right now you're not happy. And to get that support from your friends and family. And if your friends and family aren't supporting you, to get support from people who might be doing the same course as you or make new friends. Because often, Harsha, we look at the practical elements of it. Yeah, we've got all the steps, we know what we need to do, but the support is very important because the more support you have, the more you're going to be able to finish and get to that career change stage. But yeah, that's what I would say.
No, I think there's some amazing points you're making there, Soman. And also, I think looking at the reality of is it the environment or is it the job? So, Soman, we're coming to the end of our time, and loved our conversation. And I'm sure we could have carried on speaking for another hour, but you're a busy woman, and there are plenty of people you have to help. So I don't want to keep you from your work. But how can our listeners get in touch with you? What's the best way? Is it LinkedIn, your website, Twitter?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's just Sure, my gosh, you can follow me or send me a connection request. My website is www.somaghosh.com. You can also listen to my podcast as well, the Career Happiness Podcast, because there's lots of different things that I speak about on there. And yes, I am on Twitter and I'm on Instagram as well, but the main place I hang out is LinkedIn, and that's how I met Harsha.
Exactly. And how do you work with people so much?
Sure. So, the way that I work is that I have a career happiness program for professional women, and you have to apply through a link that I have, a Google link, and we actually do a paid consultation. It's a minute, very minimum cost before you start working with me, and that's a 35-minute call. But you actually get to ask me a careers advice question within that 35-minute call, and you get some session notes from me. And then, in terms of the sessions, you can work with me from 4 sessions to 12 sessions after that, if you choose to continue working with me. But I also work with parents of teens who want careers advice, and I've got 2 services for that: another parental kind of consultation session, and also a careers advice session, which is quite intense. That I actually write a report for the parents, and there's a lot involved in that. All of that stuff is on my website, www.traumagosh.com. But those are the main ways that I work with people. But I am also, Harsha, just to quickly plug a minute here, doing more workshops, because that's something that my clients have been demanding from me, because they're very busy and they can't always work with me one to one.
Of
And
course, yeah.
we live in a digital age now, and people want that knowledge. So I've got a workshop coming up about career obstacles next month. If anyone's interested, there's a wait list. I can share it with the listeners. So yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So there are multiple ways of getting hold of Soma. She's around on the internet in many different forms. And yeah, do check out her podcast. I'm sure you'll get a great deal of value from that. And one final thing, Soma. I always ask my guests if there's any, person, one or two, who you'd like to give a shout out to, who's helped you in your career or your life, or anybody you'd just like to say hi to.
It sounds a bit soppy, but I'm going to start off with my mum, actually, because one of the main reasons I'm sitting here is because of my mum and her belief in me. Because growing up, I wasn't the most academic child, but she always had a belief I was going to do a degree. She would have to believe I was going to do postgraduate. So mainly to my mum. But also, I think I want to give a shout out also to one of my friends, Alayla Akai, who does some brilliant work, Asha. She actually does a lot of kind of diversity and inclusion training, but she also does, mental first aid training, and she's just someone who supported me throughout my business. And she's got a podcast as well. But Layla Akai, she's got a business called Diverse Minds, just to give a shout out to her, because she's doing some great work as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I was going to tell you, Soma, you've got to give a shout out to your mum before you mentioned her. We've all got to look after our mums and dads and all that sort of stuff and all the things that they've done for all of us.
No, definitely.
Well, Soma, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you for sharing your knowledge. I'm sure there'll be so many valuable insights for our listeners. And do have a good rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening and staying to the end. That was such a fun interview. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please subscribe to the podcast, which is available on your favorite providers. And subscription is free. If you wish to learn more about any of the resources mentioned in this episode, please take a look at the show notes, which are available online. Thanks once again for listening. Wishing you success with your career. I hope you will join me again in the future.